And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. It's a very special Friday here at Red Eye Radio. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. And here I am just, you know, just before we go on the air, preparing and checking all different websites, the latest headlines that may be on there. And there's a headline there on DeSantis, another one, murder suspect convicted. This one, Seattle School District forced to do layoffs amid plummeting student enrollments. Another Fox News story, Chinese nationals operate nearly every illegal indoor marijuana farm in the largest county in the United States. Hershey's faces backlash, another headline from Fox, over putting a trans woman on candy bar wrapper for International Women's Day. And with all those stories, there was still enough room on FoxNews.com. Thank goodness to make sure they do what they do almost every day. Mm-hmm. Denise Richards' mini-me daughter sizzles in cheeky bikini photo shoot.
Denise Richards' daughter?
Yeah, Charlie Sheen's daughter, yeah.
I'm really getting old.
I just don't, you know, I don't get to look at, the Daily Caller used to do that all the time. We talked about this, but now they're behind a paywall, so I don't check them. I don't check them anymore. But Fox is just, what is it? What is it about these conservative publications that on their front page at some time during the day with all the hard news, they always have to have a woman, a celebrity woman in a bikini story? I mean, it's almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not every day, it's 3-4 times a week. It's like, what is it? What am I missing here?
The brunt of their audience is middle-aged men.
Okay.
Nothing to miss. If they weren't clicking, they wouldn't keep posting.
I'm waiting for the FoxNews.com bathing suit issue.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Someone's writing that down right now. we could do a... Yeah. Why not? Why not?
Oh, here's another story. Dominion and Smartmatic tried to bribe the governor and lieutenant governor of Georgia with women in bikinis.
Once again, that was Hunter. yeah. It's, you know, it really is interesting when you go through the stories. You know, you go to National Review and everything. What I love about National Review is you would think, based on the history of National Review, if you woke up and you've been out for a while and you've never been to their website, you would think it's all going to be very serious discussion about conservative values, and there are the... which would be great in and of itself, and there are those. But then you've got the good humor that is instilled in a lot of their stories. And I love that. I love, you know, whether it's Garrity or any of them,
that just, I mean, because they're doing stuff that we do. It's just, it's tongue in cheek and the way they write it.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, when I'm reading their stories, I'm thinking, okay, that's the only way. And maybe that's kind of what drives us too, in how we do it. In today's world, with the Biden administration, there's only that you could only do it. There are some things you can only do with humor because it's so bizarre.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You get the message across, because part of the problem is, I was looking at, we have the one story coming up, new survey says that young people believed basically civilization is doomed because of all the climate change rhetoric, which, of course, we knew because we saw remember the Greta kids that one time, and the one girl saying, well, we don't care about free college. It doesn't matter. We're not going to be here in 10 years. So free college doesn't mean anything to us.
Right.
Because we're all going to be wiped off the face of the earth. And that's the type of paranoia that they're teaching. But because there is, look, most of the news is negative out there. We live in a time, and we're very blunt about it, where government is the cause of the problem, and that depresses a lot of people. I mean, right now, government is when Reagan said it, good God, it's 10 times greater now.
Oh, man, yeah.
Government isn't the solution. They are actually the problem. You can look at every major issue we face today, right now, every single major issue we face, and it came from government policy. Didn't come from natural disasters, didn't come from a foreign enemy.
Yeah.
Everything was created by our society. And so it's like, why can't we solve the problems today? Well, because we created them. And it's so bizarre the way that we do it, that if you don't do it with comedy, if you don't use comedy, and people can at least laugh about it, but at the same time vote against what's going on because you made the point through comedy. You get pretty depressed.
Well, and that's it. I mean, I think observational humor really over the years has been, that's the key to it. The old saying, it's funny because it's true, and that's what you see. I mean, the way Carlin would lay out, very simple, otherwise simple observations. They weren't simple because he would do it in genius fashion. Most of the time it was just boom, and then it was exactly how you think. You connect. It's funny because it's true. Well, when you apply that to modern day political landscape of the U.S., then it almost writes itself. And you do. I mean, that's when you look at it, I think that's why the Babylon Bee. Remember when the Onion used to be the only game?
Yeah.
And then the Babylon Bee just, boom, catapulted because of the nature of the political landscape.
Well, because the headlines are fearless. That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, they're blunt.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. Sometimes I go, whoa.
Yeah.
I can't believe you guys wrote that. But, it's part of the point. Because you're making a serious point through that humor. And sometimes it's just funny to be funny. But, man, I was going through it. We mentioned, we were talking about the Supreme Court earlier this week. And we brought up Scalia, you could argue, is probably the closest to a pure constructionist, in modern years at least, as you've seen, on the Supreme Court. And I thought to myself, it's kind of like, you brought up Reagan. What would Scalia think about all the cases that are, coming about? I would just love to read his opinions on, everything at the Supreme Court. I would love to see a Ronald Reagan sit down, and I don't know if he'd go on Jimmy Fallon. He used to go on Carson. I guess he would go on Jimmy Fallon if he was still in the political game, if he were around. But I would love for him to talk about, I would love to hear his thoughts on everything today. Not just the inside the Beltway stuff, but how the, you know, the social media and social commentary through social media has also shaped the political landscape. And that to me is just fascinating to think about what he might think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it would probably be a very long conversation.
And it's fun. It's certainly be a fun conversation to have on a Friday night with maybe a couple of adult beverages.
Mm.
When you just mentioned the so-called comedy shows at night, and mm-hmm. I just had gone to the Babylon Bee just for the heck of it. The one headline: Jimmy Kimmel runs tonight's jokes by President Xi for approval.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, just great stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, just brutal.
Yeah.
Just fearless type of comedy. I mean, in your face, Chicago honors Lori Lightfoot's legacy with 21 murder salute.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's one of those gut punches.
Now, remember, they are a Christian satire site. Mm-hmm. Look at this headline.
Yeah.
Museum of Great Protestant Works of Art, just large empty building. Like, oh, my God. Shocking study shows more kids identifying as members of the world's most celebrated popular group.
right.
I mean, it's just, but you need comedy in these days. But the reason, as you know, we've talked about it, whether it's the Babylon Bee, or you mentioned, you know, National Review using it a lot, comedy in their writings, or the fact that, you know, we use it, you know, we didn't think of using it. We just laugh a lot. And you know, maybe it's a little bit because we dabbled in stand-up comedy in the past, and we did, you know, we did rock radio, where, you know, morning rock radio I did for a while, where you're always coming up with jokes, you're always writing, and so it's sort of a natural thing. But when you think about it in a way of communicating, it's a way to keep people paying attention where they don't get so depressed, because if every day it's like, it sucks, we're going down. Well, I mean, it keeps people motivated to, I think, because they're in a better mood to solve the problems and to fight the insanity that we have today.
Well, it takes a lot of heat off of the topic. It allows it to simmer down, and allows to, if you're a conservative and a critical thinker, you start to think it through in a way. I think it's one of the, for me at least, and I think for many, I have to believe for many, it was the attraction to Rush Limbaugh, because Rush did so many things, you know, tongue in cheek,
mm-hmm.
you know, and of course the liberal media took everything to be literal from him. But, you know, he would use that humor, interject it, but making a serious point. You know, he could go and monologue like nobody else. And he could also have those moments when he just throws in something where, you know, it's tongue in cheek. And it was quite often, it was so dry that if you're somebody who didn't know, then you would think it would be arrogance or something like that. But it was humor.
You know, you mentioned National Review, and I forgot which writer. I forgot it was Rich Lowry, because he stepped down as editor a couple of years ago, whether it was the writer Kevin Williamson or Kyle Smith. I can't remember who it was. But they wrote about the fact that when you get hired by National Review, they simply say two articles a week or three articles a week.
Mm-hmm.
And what are my limitations? Write about whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
They may have an editor to look to make sure the punctuation's right, but I can't remember who it was, but said they didn't change anything. I could write about whatever I wanted. And I thought to myself, wow, that's very rare that it happens when you have so many writers in fact, that might be unprecedented where you have that happening. And that's why you'll see a music. You know, something on music and popular culture.
Or TV, yeah.
Or TV.
I forget
or,
who was writing or, about or, right.
and
Yellowstone or something, yeah.
But it is the same thing as talk radio, because, and we've talked about it, you know, throughout. I don't get it much anymore at all, but we used to, well, you know, do you really believe what you're saying, or, you know, do you just tailor it? What do you mean tailor it?
Yeah, like
somebody's
right.
telling us, yeah, that, you know, your bosses are telling you what to do, and you go, no, that doesn't happen. Yeah, but you're owned by a major corporation. I go, it doesn't matter. The concept, even from a major corporation, is we want to hire you to do a show. We don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are the talk show hosts, do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really happens. There is, and I remember the guy who said, you guys are just getting fed your talking points. And
we were owned by Disney at that point?
We were No, this was after that. Mm. This was a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And because I said, what do you think? Do you think that we actually, like at 9:30? I actually wrote back to him and said, do you think like at 9:30 in the morning we get talking points and then follow it? And he said, yes.
Mm. No, actually, that was a myth being basically thrown around the liberal, I guess, echo chamber at that time, is that,
right.
Oh, these are all the talking points. There, you'll hear a lot of the same types of comments on topics if you were, and I don't listen to a ton of talk radio, but if you were to listen or watch Fox News, I guess, and listen to the commentary, you're going to hear the same types of opinions because it's people that think the same way. But it's, you know, that's one of the things that when they, you know, whether it's National Review or doing a talk show or something, it definitely inspires creativity to no end. But it also has I don't know if it's an unwritten rule, it's a very strict standard rule that you have that responsibility of delivering to your audience, but also delivering to your audience in a responsible way. So you've got to make sure that you do it correctly. But by the time they hire you, they already know you can do that. But still, every day is a very serious responsibility. If you take it seriously, then you will.
I will.
That
this,
will be so part of your standard.
Early in my career, I was always surprised that a company would hire me and just say, go say whatever you want on the air.
Yeah.
Early in my career, when it was like, I didn't have confidence in my ability to even do a talk show. Mm-hmm. And it was like, these companies are hiring you. It's like, oh, I'm faking it pretty good. And I never got an FCC violation. And it's like, oh, okay, clients are still there and people advertise. Okay. But when I first got into talk radio, this is back in 89, even in the 90s, you would get, remember, both the Republican and Democratic Party would send you talking points. You'd actually get every morning the daily talking points, mm-hmm. and that's where it came from. I don't even know if they send out emails anymore. If they do, they don't call them talking points.
Right.
But I don't get any.
Yeah, in later years, it was almost like it was a conspiracy-type situation where, okay, all the talking points have been sent out, and it wasn't like it was back in the day. And that just doesn't happen. That hasn't happened for many, many years. And it did come from the party. But the thing is that they kind of still do that. If you think through social media, it's not talking points per se, but they do send out, okay, here's what we're on. You know, and that's just the way it is with both parties.
866-90 Red Eye.
It's not always easy to spring back from the harsh days of winter to warmer months ahead. From de-icing chemicals to hidden debris underneath snow and ice, winter conditions can do serious damage to your truck. Here's a must-do maintenance check to help you minimize downtime and stay rolling. Have your wheel alignment checked to set you up for a safer and smoother ride. Driving with incorrect wheel alignment can result in reduced performance, tread wear, and steering issues. While you're at it, make sure your tires are properly inflated based on the load you're hauling. Underinflated tires can impact your fuel economy and result in blowouts. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just something I've noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at Motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letter CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up, we do want to play because there were some great, there was so much audio the other day from Attorney General Merrick Garland being grilled on the politicalization of the Department of Justice. We have more of that coming up. In fact, we have, I said Tom Cotton. I don't know why I said Tom Cotton yesterday. It's was Josh Hawley and some of his comments and back and forth that happened there that we will get to and a whole bunch more.
The Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. I'm going to. I didn't get a chance during that break, but I need to get another cup of coffee. Didn't get a lot of sleep last night in that sleep shift because of the storms that we're having and looking at them right now and where they are. I mean, this is a storm system that goes all the way up into. You know, as you look here, the, you know, middle of Missouri and the southern part of Illinois and the eastern part, the northeastern part of Tennessee right now. But the part that hit us, which was pretty intense, is all the way through Arkansas now, right through the middle of heart of Arkansas and moving into the center of Louisiana right now. And, you know, there aren't a lot of storms here that make me go, okay, I can't go to sleep. This was one of them. And we didn't get the hail that they were talking about, but the straight, mm-hmm. some of the straight line winds and gusts.
Yeah.
In the town I live in, 87 miles an hour, about seven. I live in a town that's really long, not wide, but really long. So 17 miles approximately above me is where you probably saw at the tollway in 183 where that they had tractor trailers that were tipped over. Mm-hmm. And that's where they had the 87-mile-an-hour gust. I don't believe, you know, I'm laying in bed and watching the TV and, you know, getting ready to run into the middle of the house somewhere. I don't think I got above 45 miles an hour, but everywhere else, I mean, it was just...
Yeah, just north of here, they had those same gusts, and it was our engineer, Sean, was in the building. He was just checking out the building, making sure that we had no damage here, but where he lives, north of here, he said there were, you know, shingles and everything from roofs, and of course, when they get some sunlight on it tomorrow, they'll be able to assess the damage further. But yeah, it was one of those systems that and I was watching it, and the storms at first weren't producing like they thought they were going to, tornadoes and then all of a sudden, one or two of the cells just broke. There were a couple of tornadoes that broke, and then it just kind of went bonkers from there. The later the afternoon went on and into the evening, and became much more serious. But like north of here and into Oklahoma, up in the Sherman-Denison area of North Texas and then into Oklahoma early on, they had some tornado warnings, and the hail west of here is that storm system. There were two rounds. The second round of that building with a lot of gusty winds, that's really where the winds came in, the wind gusts came in, and a lot of the hail came from in that second round. So, yeah, it was one of those days, and I thought to myself, well, you know, we're just in the first couple of days of March.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
that's when we get this.
But we've had a mild, very mild winter. A couple of cold spells, a little bit of ice, but really temperatures that quite often throughout the winter were much higher than average. And we're going to go, now we're going to go up in temperature early next week and then plummeting down to slightly below average, I think, for right. this time of year. But
yeah, so right now it's in the middle of Arkansas, and it's, you know, it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It can be. Thank goodness there's no loss of life.
Yeah,
here
yeah.
in
none that we know of
in Texas as, that we yeah, know of. Yeah, yeah. As we know, but it's one to watch out. And when I posted it yesterday, just about it you know, going to hit here, some of our friends, our great listeners in Detroit, went, you know, that's all coming up here, you know, and it's going to cause all this problem. Up in the Northeast.
Yeah.
My father says that to me all the time. He says, you damn people down in Texas, you know how many storms start down there and end up here?
Yeah.
Well, if you're not going to allow us to secede, we're going to cause weather problems for you.
Yeah. It's amazing how big this system is, and
yeah.
it isn't over. It's going to be parts of the Ohio Valley on Friday, but it has moved east. And it's going to continue that east and northward turn and path.
All right. Yesterday we played some of the audio of Congress going after the politicalization of the Department of Justice, and we had played Ted Cruz's comment yesterday, and there's so much audio. There's so much, because this went on for hours upon hours upon hours.
Mm-hmm.
We've had to be selective, but they went after Garland. They went after him big time. Let's play Senator Josh Hawley and his back and forth between himself and the Attorney General.
Attorney General Garland, let me just ask you, does your department have a problem with anti-Catholic bias?
Our department protects all religions and all ideologies. It does not have any bias against any religion of any kind.
Well, you could have surprised me, because given the resources that you are expending and the apparently intelligence assets that you are deploying against Catholics, it appears, and other people of faith, while simultaneously turning a blind eye while people are executed gang style in the streets of our cities, including in my home state, your answer frankly surprises me. Let's talk about the Mark Haupt case, for example. You've been asked about this already today, and frankly, your answers really astound me. This is a case where a Catholic pro-life demonstrator, father, was accused of disorderly conduct in front of an abortion center. The local prosecutor, the Philadelphia district attorney, who is a Democrat, a liberal, very progressive, declined to prosecute. There was a private suit that got dismissed. And then after all of that, your Justice Department sent between 20 and 30 armed agents in the early morning hours to the Houck's private residence to arrest this guy after he had offered to turn himself in voluntarily. Here's the photo. Once again, you can see the long guns. You can see the ballistic shields. You can see that they're wearing bulletproof vests. Why did the Justice Department do this? Why did you send 20 to 30 SWAT-style agents and a SWAT-style team to this guy's house when everybody else had declined to prosecute and he'd offered to turn himself in?
Determinations of how to make arrests under arrest warrants are made based by the tactical operators in the district. They are not.
But you surely looked into it by this point, right? You know the answer, surely.
All I know is what the FBI has said, which is that they made decisions on the ground as to what was safest and easiest.
So
you do not agree with your description of what happened on the scene.
You don't agree with my description. I'm pointing out what the photo is. There are agents here who have long guns and ballistic shields. Let's take a look at the hardened criminals that your Justice Department sent these armed agents to go terrorize on that morning. Here they are. Here they are at mass. Here's the seven children with Mr. Houck and his wife. In this early morning, they were all at home. Mrs. Houck has said repeatedly the children were screaming. They feared for their lives. You've got these agents demanding that he come out. They've got the gun, she said, pointing at the house and at them. He has offered to turn himself in. And this is who you go to terrorize. What's really interesting to me is this seems to directly contradict your own memorandum about the use of force at the Justice Department. You say officers may use only the force that is objectively reasonable to effectively control an incident. Are you telling me that in your opinion as Attorney General, it was objectively necessary to use 20 or 30 SWAT-style agents with long guns and ballistic shields for these people?
What I'm saying is that decisions about how to go about this were made on the ground by FBI agents.
So you're saying you don't know?
I'm saying what I just said.
Which is that you're abdicating responsibility?
I'm not abdicating responsibility.
Then give me the answer. Do you think, in your opinion, you are the Attorney General of the United States. You are in charge of the Justice Department. And yes, sir, you are responsible. So give me an answer.
The FBI does not agree with your description.
I'm not asking about the FBI. You are the Attorney General. Give me your answer. Do you think that it was objectively reasonable and they followed your guidelines in sending 20 to 30 armed agents to terrorize these people? Yes or no?
The facts I have, which are those presented by the FBI, are not consistent with your description.
So you think it was reasonable?
I'm saying the facts are not as you describe.
What, that the children weren't there? That there weren't long guns there? That there weren't agents? What do you dispute? What's the factual premise you dispute?
FBI
be specific.
FBI said they don't agree with your description of...
Be specific. They don't agree with what?
Of how many agents, of the agents who were there, and of what their roles were. They don't agree.
Do you know the jury in this case acquitted Mr. Houck, as I'm sure you're aware. Do you know how long it took him?
I am aware, and we respect the decision of the jury.
Do you know how long it took him?
I don't know.
1 hour. 1 hour. Philadelphia District Attorney declines to prosecute. The private suit's dismissed. You use an unbelievable show of force with guns that I just note liberals usually decry. We're supposed to hate long guns and assault-style weapons. You're happy to deploy them against Catholics and innocent children. Happy to. And then you haul him into court and a jury acquits him in 1 hour. I just suggest to you that that is a disgraceful performance by your Justice Department and a disgraceful use of resources. I notice a pattern, though. The FBI field office in Richmond on the 23rd of January of this year issued a memorandum in which they advocated for, and I quote, the exploration of new avenues for tripwire and source development against traditionalist Catholics, it's their language, including those who favor the Latin Mass. Attorney General, are you cultivating sources and spies in Latin Mass parishes and other Catholic parishes around the country?
No, the Justice Department does not do that. It does not do investigations based on religion. I saw the document you have.
What did
it's
you do
appalling.
About it?
It's appalling. I'm in complete agreement with you. I understand that the FBI has withdrawn it, and it's now looking into how this could ever have happened.
How did it happen?
That's what they're looking into. But I'm totally in agreement with you. That document is appalling.
I'll tell you how it happened. This memorandum, which is supposed to be intelligent, cites extensively the Southern Poverty Law Center, which goes on to identify all of these different Catholics as being part of hate groups. Is this how the FBI, under your direction and leadership, is this how they do their intelligence work? They look at left-wing advocacy groups to target Catholics? Is this what's going on? I mean, clearly it is. How is this happening?
The FBI is not targeting Catholics, and as I've said, this is an inappropriate memorandum, and it doesn't reflect the methods that the FBI is supposed to be using.
You know, that's the problem, is that he agreed that it's appalling, and you can't ignore the fact that, you know, and you and I've talked about this before. Is it a conspiracy theory that's going on between liberals, or is it a culture? And that's a culture from that FBI field office where they had no problem. Something that the, and this is the whole thing where it says, we don't do this, we do everything right. Then he admits something is so incredibly outrageous. We're not targeting Catholics, yet this is so outrageous because you're targeting Catholics that may, and as a Catholic myself, I don't understand the tie-in between that and the Latin Mass. I mean, I have no idea where that's going. But the Mark Hauck case we've talked about before, we talked about it yesterday. This is a guy who's a sidewalk counselor, and somebody came up and threatened and intimidated, you know, to his young son. And so I guess he pushed him, shoved him.
Yeah.
And so everybody, you know, the Philadelphia prosecutor, who was somebody on the, you know, again, the far left, is Philadelphia prosecutors are, many of them are, declined to prosecute. Couldn't get anything there. Then the Justice Department said, okay, we're going to go into this. There's, you know, there may be a warrant. And he said, I'll turn myself in.
Yeah.
You want me to turn myself in? I'll turn myself in.
With his attorney.
With his attorney, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. I will turn myself in peacefully, and instead they raid the home. You follow that up with the Richmond field office and talking about getting, you know, sources and methods, and the question that Holly asked is a legit question. Do you have sources inside the Catholic Church trying to find radicals? Well, we don't target religions. The memo says you do, and you've called it appalling. It was a really bad moment.
Well, here's the thing. He saw the memo, calls it appalling, but doesn't say it's fake. He doesn't deny.
He says the authenticity
of the memo. Oh, it's appalling. Yeah, it is appalling, and you're in charge. It's your responsibility. It all stops with you. You know, here's the thing. The other day he mentions, well, you know, the men and women of the Department of Justice. And then he throws them under the bus repeatedly. Oh, the agents did that. The agents made that call. I don't do that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Progressive Commercial Insurance protects truck owners with specialized coverages.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. You'll want to hear this Hershey's chocolate story coming up.
Top of the hour news is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit howesproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen when and where you want. If you can't, listen live to one of our great radio stations overnight. Well, another reason to believe, another indication that Biden will run for president.
Yeah.
And it happened yesterday where Biden said he will not veto the resolution to overturn the District of Columbia law that eases sentences on carjackings, burglaries, and other felonies if it passes the Senate.
Mm.
And it looks like it will pass the Senate. Media just sort of starting to pick up now how Dianne Feinstein's in the hospital, so is Fetterman.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, uh-oh, Manchin and Tester aren't voting that way. So Republicans have an advantage right now in the Senate.
Yeah.
And you saw on the ESG bill, you had both Tester, we talked about this yesterday, both now the president's going to veto that, but both Tester and Manchin both voted the other way, voted with Republicans. Mm-hmm. And on the D.C. bill to soften the sentences on major crimes that even the mayor of Washington, she vetoed it.
Yeah.
And right. They overrode her veto.
Mm.
And you had 31 Democrats in the House vote with the Republicans.
Yeah.
You can tell it's election time because that doesn't happen.
We're tough on crime.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so as recently as yesterday, I went back and looked, Karine Jean-Pierre wasn't answering the question specifically about, you know, is the president going to veto it? Now, they did say before that he would.
Right.
I mean, all the stories, even yesterday before he said it, and the day before, we're talking about how he's going to veto the ESG bill and the D.C. crime bill.
Mm-hmm.
And he reversed it. And I think 2 days ago, they must have been having the discussion because Karine Jean-Pierre said, well, I'm not going to get into hypotheticals, but this is why the president believes that Washington, that D.C. should be a state. It's like, okay, so you're saying he's going to veto it then.
Right.
Because you believe they should be autonomous and be able to do whatever they wish to do. And then he comes out yesterday and says he's not going to veto it. And then this question was asked to Karine Jean-Pierre. This is just great.
Here's the second half of that question, which is, why should Americans believe the White House when it says it doesn't support something when the president's going to sign it no less?
I think what the American people, who I just mentioned to one of your colleagues, I think the American people know who Joe Biden is. I think.
Oh, really?
That he changes his mind constantly? Whichever way the political winds are blowing? Is that what I mean?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
And Democrats are just furious.
Yeah.
Mediaite.com had this. It said, President Joe Biden surprised Democratic lawmakers on Thursday by telling them he would sign a resolution overturning a new law in Washington, D.C. The law, which the district council passed over the veto of Mayor Bowser, eases penalties for a variety of criminal offenses, including major violent crimes. The House of Representatives passed a resolution to overturn the law, but it still required the approval of the Senate. It still requires the approval of the Senate. Last month, 173 Democrats voted against the measure, citing a respect for D.C. home rule. 31 Democrats joined Republicans in voting to overturn, which makes it a major bipartisan piece of legislation in the House.
Yeah.
Biden informed Democrats attending a Senate lunch on Thursday he will sign the resolution if it gets to his desk, thus overturning the D.C. law. As word spread after the meeting, some Democrat lawmakers were unhappy, to say the least. The White House F this up royally, an anonymous House Democrat texted The Hill. The lawmaker noted Biden previously said he supports D.C.'s right to self-governance and would oppose the very kind of resolution he now says he would sign.
Hmm.
So a lot of us who are allies voted no in order to support what the White House wanted, and now we're being hung out to dry, the lawmaker added.
Mm-hmm.
Effing amateur hour. Heads should roll over at the White House over this.
You mean the president?
No.
It's his decision.
Right. Unless what this Democrat is stating is that Biden is not in charge.
Well,
is that what he's implying? Biden is not in charge? The Democrat state that all lawmakers are extremely PO'd about Biden's comments. And I love this quote. Then he wants it both ways here. The president took to Twitter on Thursday to reiterate what he told lawmakers privately. I support D.C. statehood and home rule, but I don't support some of the changes the D.C. council has put forward over the mayor's objections. Then you don't support statehood and home rule.
Right.
Because if home rule is about the fact that the D.C. council can overrule the mayor, that's still home rule.
Right.
What you're saying is, I'm trying to play it both ways. What you're trying to say is, I would actually vote against the bill. Or,
yeah.
Excuse me. I would actually vote for the bill. I would veto this bill.
Right.
So you can lessen the crimes in D.C., but I'm running for president, and I have to be tough on crime again.
Right.
I can't be the defund the police guy that I was in the summer of 2020.
And thank God I have Mayor Bowser to back me up in this case.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody knows. The Democrats know it's BS. That's why they're furious.
Of course.
Here it is. And this is Mediaite there. This is the liberal media watchdog. They look at conservative media most of the time. And they try to find, you know, hypocrisy in the conservative media.
Yeah.
Here's what they write. Biden's pledge to abide by D.C.'s self-governance appears at odds with his promise to overturn laws passed by the district.
You know.
God, that's hilarious.
And, sorry. You know. It really started at the State of the Union where he was screaming, we don't need to defund the police, we need to fund them. Fund them, fund them, fund them. You know, it's this disingenuous, contrived stance that they're taking, you know, because they need to reshape things and redirect things.
Yep.
They see the crime. They see the numbers. Oh, well, we're going to do something about that. Yeah, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're part of the cause. This is a guy who still really hasn't decided if he's going to go and visit a train derailment that spilled chemicals in a community. Yeah. And they still have no idea the full effect. This is a guy who refused for the longest time to go to the border. And when he did, he really didn't go to the border.
Well, I think the perfect thing was yesterday, not only this, but when he came out and said, yeah, I'm going to go to East Palestine at some indeterminate place in the future.
After a few days ago saying he has no plans to go.
Exactly. I will go, but it's too late, and now that he's going to wait, it's like, well, how long is he going to wait?
I mean, if he would finish the sentence, he would just say, if I wanted to see a train wreck, I'd go visit Hunter.
Yeah, exactly. It's just... And Democrats are, like, furious over the... You know, they're furious over the White House response. And I think, you know, I think actually what set him off was his stubbornness not wanting to go to East Palestine because he was being told he had to go and he doesn't like being told what to do.
He doesn't like being told what to do.
Right. And I think that's where the fury started because we covered all the media that's still pounding on that, the liberal media, because they know it's a political disaster. Because you take something, as we stated this early on before anybody, I believe before anybody else, we said, well, when this first happened, this is insanity. This is everything that the Democrats want. It's an environmental disaster that hurts regular people in the heartland, and it's the big bad companies destroying the environment and not doing their job. And Democrats and the media are like, you got to be all over this. No, I'm not going to go. No, we're not going to talk about
it
for over 2 weeks.
I'll go when I feel like it.
And so I think really this just set them off because they're just they just went, what the hell are you doing? You know, you said over and over again, you told us, and at the last minute, when it looks like the Senate has the votes to pass it, now you say I'm not going to veto.
Yeah,
this bill. Well, of course, he's not going to veto the bill because he has to be tough on crime, and so he says this is typical White House, and expect Karine Jean-Pierre to talk about it this way in the future.
Mm.
The president supports D.C. statehood and home rule. But he just doesn't support some of the changes put forth by the D.C. Council. Well, then you don't support the home rule. You don't support it. Stop it. And Democrats are finally, you know, it's Democrats that are furious about this, going, stop it. You can't have it both ways. You're saying you're for one thing, and you're not. And then the president's saying that mm-hmm. is why the reporter yeah. said, wait a minute, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth here.
Yeah.
Well, And her answer is, well, everybody knows who Joe Biden is. Yeah, that's the point I'm bringing up to you.
No, I mean, that's her best answer. Well, you know, I mean, you know, Joe Biden, guys. I mean, come on. You know who you're talking about, right?
Oh, gosh. This is... I'm telling you, it is entertaining watching this. If it wasn't so serious, it might be funny.
It's just... It has to be maddening internally. Because I really now, I would bet money that I'm right, that internally the frustration is all over the place because he's just defiant at every turn. I mean, I can see the conversation going this way. Joe Biden says, you know, I think I should go to East Palestine. And then someone else in the room says, yes, you should go. You're not telling me what to do.
I'm not going
to
go
I'll
now.
Go when I want.
I just love it.
No, I mean, that's who he is.
But to say yesterday, I'm going to go, I just don't know when.
Yeah.
When you announce you're going to go, you say when.
What did you expect from a guy who, while he was campaigning, trying to earn votes, starts screaming at an auto worker, fighting with the guy on a campaign stop? Not debating and saying, well, you know, I hear your concern and... Blah, blah. No, he was. I was waiting for him to roll up his sleeves and say, "Come on, Jack, come at me." And they didn't see this. Have you guys been paying attention at all?
866-90 Red Eye.
Surviving and thriving as an owner operator has just as much to do with managing costs as it does with generating revenue. Like the chief financial officer of any company, you have to be concerned about rising costs, especially without increases in revenue. Trying to reduce costs, let alone make sense of them, can be a complicated task. Understanding basic principles of operating costs can save you thousands of dollars a year. A penny saved could be $1,000 earned. Saving just one penny per mile over 100,000 miles driven annually will deliver $1,000 to the bottom line at the end of the year. Owner-Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Personalized savings on commercial truck insurance.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I would think that they would have to, the pressure coming from the Democrats for the president to visit East Palestine and the media has to be unbelievable right now.
Yeah.
Now that the
yeah.
president says, well, I'm going to go, I just don't know when.
Well, that makes it worse.
Yeah, I would think that by today they would have to settle on some kind of date.
It's honestly, then, you know, I said it earlier this week, but if I were advising inside the White House, I would tell them, you're just going to have to ignore it. Because when you go now, it looks so bad. The story is, the headline is, finally.
Right.
Look what it took to get him to East Palestine.
Yeah.
That's the headline.
Right. But he puts himself into a damned if you do or damned if you don't situation.
And you can't undo what's already done. Unless you've got a time machine, this ain't going to be fixed.
When I saw that yesterday, I burst out laughing. I'm like, I'm going to go, but
oh my gosh,
I don't know when.
When I saw that headline.
This has to be the Battle on B or something.
A few days ago, I've got no plans to visit. Yeah. I mean, you just, honestly, just pick something and stick with it. Because now this is just like the botched exit of Afghanistan in terms of the response to the media, because we were waiting that Sunday night, that weekend that the exit of Afghanistan happened, and Sunday night we were expecting, okay, everybody's out, and so he's going to make a statement. He didn't make a statement.
He had to
be bothered to come back off of vacation. Well, then he turns his back, goes right back to vacation, and everybody's screaming, where are you going? And then he's forced to come back and do a sit-down interview.
Well, I really wonder. I mean, I was right in the direction you were going. If he comes out tomorrow and says, yes, I've decided that I'm going to visit a week from Monday after I get back from another week's vacation.
Well, or you might as well just say, I'll go on the one-year anniversary. During election year. I mean, seriously.
I'm going to go during primary time.
Because there's no way to undo the damage right now, and that is going to be the headline. Finally, he goes.
We're going to do a flyover, but it'll be from Air Force One at 39,000 feet.
No, we're going to do a flyover, and I'm not going to even be in the plane. It's not going to even be a plane. It's going to be a drone.
Say a balloon.
Right, exactly. We're gonna. Our friends from China are gonna use one of their balloons to fly over it, so we can get some pictures of it.
You can understand because the frustration with the Democrats over this, and then I think it just blew up with some Democrats when he said he was, you know, not going to veto, you know, if the Senate passes our law, he's not going to veto that bill,
right.
Concerning the District of the D.C. Board wanting to lessen the sentences for violent crimes.
Right.
I think at that point they just went, what the hell's going on? I mean, it's just all over the place.
Right, right.
You know, who's leading in the White House?
Who is in charge?
When I saw that one, I'm like, oh, they're wondering who's in charge.
Right.
Democrats are.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
The Fourth Branch of Government, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to chat this morning. Well, there it is. Hershey's faces backlash over putting a trans woman on a candy bar wrapper for International Women's Day.
Yeah. Her for she,
yes.
It says on the wrapper.
Yes.
And
her, she.
So congratulations, ladies. The men have taken over International Women's Day.
Yes. What are we going to celebrate on International Women's Day? Men. Mm-hmm. It's about damn time.
Yeah. Man. And I'm sure it's being celebrated all over the world, right?
Yes.
I mean, it is International Women's Day.
Yep.
And I'm sure that this rapper is, oh, it's only in Canada. Okay. All right. Yeah. Because go ahead and take that to other nations. Go ahead. Put that out. See what happens. See what kind of feedback you get. Maybe it would be positive feedback all over the world.
Yes.
Like social media users slam the candy company after it debuted.
Mm-hmm.
Disturbed Twitter users hammered the new ad mm-hmm. for presenting a transgender woman as Hershey's representation of the pro-female celebration.
Yeah.
There were quite a few, apparently, tweets that said, why does Hershey hate women?
Yeah, right.
And that would be the question. As we've said before, the incredible femophobia and misogyny of the movement, which now Hershey's Chocolate presents. This is hate towards women by the Democrat standard of what hate is.
Now, I don't know if they did special rappers on International Women's Day before. But wow, if they didn't, and then the first one they do has a man on it. I'd have to check into that. I honestly don't know if they've done it before. But ladies, look, you had a good run.
Yeah, yeah. It's about time that
you saw the power lifter that won the case against the organization, transgender. And so
where?
You know, powerlifting that was somewhere here in the US, and it was a powerlifting organization. You know, those are the lifters who just, you know, your whole goal is just to get the weight. You're not a bodybuilder or anything like that. It's a powerlifting competition. And there was a lawsuit, and they decided that lawsuit against the organization, so they have to allow transgenders to compete with females. Men, biological men, have to be allowed to compete. Well, you know, I mean, because if you can't make it in male powerlifting, then what do you do? Well, you go compete against the ladies. And yeah. I'm sure there's going to be all the celebration of all the records being set and everything else, right?
Well, wait a minute. Isn't lifting for women unladylike?
Yeah, there's that.
Look, since everybody else is being, you know, misogynist,
yeah.
you can throw, I'm thinking about the Seinfeld episode, remember? Good Naked and Bad Naked.
Yeah, right.
Where she flexes her muscles. But then again, Jerry also was bad naked too. So,
well,
it was equality of bad nakedness and muscles appearing when you put stress on them and yeah. how unattractive it is.
Right.
Either way, but you know, you had that yet, which of course is, you know, and that's why we have said, look, we've been talking about this for the longest time, and we said, oh, before we're attacked, we'll be on the offense. We'll attack them. Before anybody dares call us transgenders or hate mongers in any way, which we are not,
mm-hmm.
we will point out that the hate mongers and the female hate is in the liberal transgender activist movement. The misogyny, the femophobia that exists, they are the ones that created this.
Here's the story from NBC News. USA Powerlifting, the organization, lost a two-year court battle this week after a judge ruled that it had discriminated against a transgender athlete, this is male to female transgender, J.C. Cooper, by banning J.C. from competing in women's competition. The ruling also mandated that the sports organization, quote, cease and desist from all unfair discriminatory practices, end quote. But
what court was this?
Is that not unfair to and discriminatory to women?
Yeah, what court was it?
Doesn't mention. This is NBC News. Hold on a second. Monday's court ruling. Hold on a sec. I'll find it.
Okay.
Why are you asking?
Well, because it's going to be appealed.
Oh, sure, it's going to be appealed.
It's not the
Supreme Court.
Oh, I know. I just wondered what level.
It's always going to be.
But I wonder what level is. Is it state? Is it local? Is it federal? That's what I wondered.
Well, no, I think this is going to get to the Supreme Court.
No, but I mean this case. Was it local, state, federal?
Yeah. But there's no doubt it's going to be. This is going to go all the way to. You're going to see a lot more cases like this go all the way to the top.
Yeah.
And for good reason. Because this court is saying, and I want to see where they mention the judge. And what's funny is normally in these stories, they mention the judge in the court in the first couple of paragraphs. But this is the problem that the left has, is that it is going to go to court. And it is going to be found unfair and discriminatory against women. That's what it's going to come down to.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to get, this is the thing, is that there will be some organizations that just, do it. Now, the interesting cases will be the biological female athletes who take it to court. Wait for that to happen. And take it all the way to the Supreme Court that we're being discriminated against because they're allowing men to compete in our sport. Now, the question would be if, you've mentioned a couple of times the PGA. PGA does allow women to compete. I mean, you have to qualify for it. You have to be able to compete.
You have to hit from the same tees.
Mm-hmm. And you can compete, but there's a reason that they have the LPGA, so that women are competing against women. Now, how long before an organization comes along and says, all right, transgenders can compete in the ladies' organization, and then female athletes take that to court? I don't think that's very long. There may be a case in the court already filed. I haven't seen one.
Okay, like this was a county court.
Okay.
Because it says, in 2019, Cooper, through Gender Justice, filed a discrimination claim with the Minnesota Department of Human Rights against USA Powerlifting for banning him and all other, because it's not a her, it's a him,
mm-hmm.
and all the other trans women athletes from competing in women's competitions.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2021, the team filed a lawsuit against the organization in Ramsey County.
Mm-hmm.
I was fed up with the way I was being treated. I was fed up with the way that my community was being treated, and enough is enough, Cooper said. With the ruling, including a cease and desist on U.S. powerlifting of all unfair discriminatory practices because of sexual orientation and the request for the agency to submit a revised policy, this is a win. Okay, but again, they said county court.
Saying it was filed in the county.
But it looks like this is a state court, not a federal court.
Okay.
In the statement, USA Powerlifting's president said they will be exploring options, including the appeal. The statement is below. USA Powerlifting has been involved in litigation in Minnesota involving participation of transgender women in competitive powerlifting. Our position has been aimed at balancing the needs of cis and transgender women whose capacities differ significantly in purely strength sports. We have received a summary judgment decision from the court finding us liable for discrimination. We respectively disagree with the court's conclusions. We are considering all of our options, including appeal. By the way, at this particular point, this is when, I don't know what type of money it costs to do this, but this is when one of those legal organizations should do this pro bono.
Yeah, you might see that.
Because you want to take this right up to the Supreme Court is what you want to do.
Right.
Because then the WNBA is gone.
Well, no, that's WNBA, the first thing
WNBA is gone.
That we've asked the question, what if someone of LeBron James caliber decided he just wanted to become, he's going to go through a transition, and he wants to play in the WNBA.
Not even LeBron James. Anybody that can't make the NBA or can't make the D-League, can't make it overseas.
Sure, but I use that because it would be such a standout. It would be such a massive standout in the talent comparison. Now, comparing him to other NBA players, you can make that case. But if he just decides he wants to live as a woman and then go play in the WNBA, what happens?
He makes a lot less money.
Not about the money, about making the statement.
Making the statement. And yep. That's why I brought up, you know, you're talking about people that, you're talking about men that cannot make a living. This is where it goes. Men who cannot make a living because they're not one of the top, you know, 5,000 men athletes in a particular sport,
right?
But they can easily defeat women, and they can make money doing it,
right?
But this is where the next This is where it would go next. So.
Because my question would be, like in powerlifting, well, does the organization have a rule about how much testosterone can be? Because do they check female athletes for testosterone, right? Which would imply that you have testosterone, some kind of testosterone enhancing.
Yeah, it was a Ramsey County Court District judge.
So you have the comparison of, you know, doping or using hormone treatment, right? Does that violate the rule in any way? Well, what about the natural state of a biological male and their hormone versus a female hormone's natural state, if neither one are using anything outside to influence their hormones? Well, then what happens then? Is that a fair comparison? If the female athletes can't use testosterone injections, but the male, biological male, comes in and naturally has a lot more testosterone. You're telling me that's fair.
Well, it's not fair even if a male goes through hormone treatments.
Right.
Because they're still bigger.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter.
Because their natural hormones develop that way.
But when you think about this being celebrated in Minnesota, the hatred of the left towards women, seriously, the femophobia, the misogyny, the sexism, that is so blatant here, that is supported by the mainstream of the Democratic Party. Understand this. You would think that some of the women in the Democratic Party would be furious. They're all for it. You know who didn't agree with it? Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
No, she didn't.
She didn't agree with this at all.
Nope.
And it's like the women, as I said, the women's movement. When Gloria Steinem came out, the women's movement, whoever thought Gloria Steinem would fold because the man says so.
You pack it up and go home. It's over. It's because if she's done, and really in terms of icon, right, of the women's movement on that front, icon's a big word. I'm just saying what they would, would say, you know, in terms of that. And you could say the same for RBG. Then these two individuals are now, you know, RBG never changed her position, by the way.
Nope, never.
I never saw where she changed her position. I wonder what the left thinks about that, or if they know.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Join the conversation.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harney, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the top of the hour, another story, too, on the liberal transgender activist movement around the corner.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the entire planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our app today. Listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. Oh my gosh, I nearly was having a protein shake there during the break. I nearly spit it up when I just read this headline. Biden's translator leaves the White House. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And that was, even though she was on the other day, that was about Kate Bedingfield, the White House communications director.
Right.
But it was when I just saw Biden's translator.
You know.
Oh, my. Actually, the translator, because she's only on once in a while, the translator of Biden is actually Karine Jean, and we came up with this by accident earlier this week, Repair.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the question. Does he need a different type of translator? Because, you know, this,
nobody can do it. You and I had said, well, we said this months ago, they should have put Kirby in there instead of Karine Jean-Pierre. But he even comes across, you can't defend this guy. He's impossible. He's actually harder. You know, you look at it, they had, Trump had some horrible spokespeople. The Mooch for a day or two, remember that?
Yeah.
But Sarah Huckabee Sanders was excellent.
But even at some point, she just quit having daily press events.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, you're right. No, you're right. They did. They didn't hold him. You're right. They didn't.
They just said, forget it.
But he's, it's horrible and has been since the very, very beginning. Even Jen Psaki was horrible. She was better than Karine Jean-Pierre, but again, everything is relative.
Well, you know, it hit me for some reason. And I was reading a story yesterday, and then the thought, when it came across that he might visit East Palestine at some point in the future.
There's a possibility.
And
it could happen.
The response he gave when he was asked a question the other day, I don't have time. I don't have. It really is. He is the, hey, kids, get out of my yard president. I was just reading a piece on National Review. I think it was Dan McLaughlin. How old is Joe Biden? And then they go through. Hold on. They go through. There it is. All right. How old is Joe Biden? They give these examples of when he started serving in the Senate, you could go get a Coke and a burger at McDonald's for 43 cents,
Jimi Hendrix was alive.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Was it 69 or 70 that Biden started in the Senate? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Or was it later? I
want to say it was early 70s, a year or two later. I don't have it in front of me, but yeah. And so they point out all these, and what's interesting is that they're pointing out, and they have other articles at National Review have pointed out how old, the fact that he's the first octogenarian and a president. And then that it will play into, his age definitely will play into 2024. His age played into 2020. There's no way it's not going to play into the next election. And so, you know, but they make all these comparisons. But he really has become, in his responses, the, you kids get out of my ear, don't tell me what to do. And his, even his own personal lawyers. He just can't deal with the fact that other people are giving him advice.
Yeah, 72, he became a senator. He started in politics in 70.
Yeah, so. Right.
He was on the Newcastle County Council.
Yeah.
So that was before he decided.
What is influencing, influence peddling like at that level? What do you get?
Well, at the
local for influence at the local level.
And let's put it this way: at a level lower than president, influence peddling many times is investigated by the FBI as bribery.
That's what we used to call it. Hey, here's a little money. You know, if we could get a
ask the former governor governors of Illinois.
You can ask pretty much anyone that's still living. I'm guessing, you know, at the city level, it's a we need some you know, potholes to be fixed. Here's an unsaid amount of money. I'm just going to scoot that over there. It's not mine. I don't know who left it over there. Those, you know, you think about the fact that. Getting back to his age, that there really hasn't, I mean, the focus has been, it's the unsaid blue whale in the living room. We talked about it in 2020. Everybody talked about it in 2020. But the left really isn't addressing that at all on the age thing.
Well, they are in a way that everything is fine.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He's as good as anybody else serving in that position.
That's
while. While 75% of Americans believe there's something wrong with them, the latest survey this week,
and that's it. And that's what I mean by the blue whale in the living room. They won't come out and say it. You know, it's very clear. Everybody knows it. They've known it since the beginning, since he was going to run, announced he was going to run in 2019. And so he will be, on election day, he will be just days away from becoming 82 next year. He'll turn 82 not long after election day. Those are the things that, and there are plenty of 82-year-olds that are in their prime. That mentally don't have the issues that he has. Whatever's causing those issues, there are plenty of 82-year-olds that don't have that. Mm-hmm. But it is the real question that everybody's asking and has been asking for a long time. Look, the Democrats had no problem bringing it up with Ronald Reagan.
And he was younger.
Well,
When you look at everything right now that liberalism is selling or the administration is selling, for example, the border is secure. Everyone knows it's a lie. How many times have we said what's unique to this presidency that you would never see in a Republican presidency is the fact that, you know, there's Karine Jean-Pierre up there and she's or Kirby. And we had said this over the last couple of weeks, I don't know, probably 10 times for 10 different issues. She's speaking. And she knows she's lying. The press corps knows she's lying. Mm-hmm. The people of the United States know that she's lying. She knows that everybody knows. Everybody knows that she's lying. And they still continue to lie because no one will come out directly and bluntly and say it. You know, I happened to on YouTube yesterday, the Carlin thing came up about political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said is, you know, now we don't talk about the fact that people lie. We talk about disinformation. We don't use that word lie.
Interesting that he said that back then.
Yeah, back then. And I said, you know, something because there is. And his whole point was when you say the word lie, it's a, you know, it's a hard word.
Yeah.
And he goes through, you know, political correctness in general that you say, well, it's disinformation. No, it's a damn lie. Mm-hmm. When you say that, that, and I added the damn in there, but it's very, I did it for effect. You go, if somebody says that and that those two words are used together many times, you go, whoa, wow. Mm-hmm. If you say, well, they're engaging in disinformation.
Yeah.
It seems right. to soften it.
Right.
But that's why we say lie. But right. when we say lie, we get specific with what the lie is and explain precisely, because if you're going to accuse somebody of being a liar, you better damn well have done your homework. Well, that's how we view it.
If you believe they're a liar, you shouldn't worry about softening it, and you shouldn't worry about
right.
possibly hurting their feelings. There's a reason when you say the when you look at someone and say you're a liar,
that's tough.
It will stop a room.
Well, yeah, because if you looked at me and said, Gary, you're a liar,
mm-hmm.
I'd go, whoa. If you said, Gary, on your talk show,
I believe times, you were engaging in disinformation.
You are engaging in disinformation and sometimes misinformation and at times maybe some pseudo-truths.
What did Andrea Mitchell say when she was doing her non-apology to DeSantis?
Precise. Was it precise?
I was not being precise or
was
something
precise?
Like that. Yeah. Yeah. No. No, because that implies you got something wrong, and it was unintentional. You knew something to be the truth, and you said otherwise. That's a lie. It was, you know, those. But that's exactly what the left has to do, so that when they get caught lying, they can say, "Well, we just weren't precise." No. That means that you got in the ballpark and that you were trying to tell the truth. You just missed the mark. When you break down precision, that's what you're talking about. You're not talking about with intention walking into a conversation and making something up.
She was imprecise.
She was imprecise.
Imprecise.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. You know, Eric, you've been imprecise
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, fine. Eric, you're a damn liar.
See, that's no.
I mean, there's a difference.
There is a difference. It's exactly how I laid it out. If you were aiming at something and you missed the target, you're imprecise.
Exactly.
But you were trying, right? You were
right.
Your intention was. I don't know if it was pure. It might have been lazy. I don't know if lazy can be pure. This is the problem with being a talk show host, is that you start breaking down the meaning of words because words have meaning.
I like that. Can you be lazy yet still pure?
Yeah,
I like that.
You know what I mean? I'm
going to use that somewhere in the next week. I don't know where, but
well, because
I like that.
If you don't put in the effort, that to me is a bit of an impurity. It's not imprecise, but it is an impurity. These are the – see? This is why. But those – you know, that's exactly the point of – you know, that Carlin makes in brilliant fashion as he often did.
Very quickly,
mm-hmm.
when you just did that, you reminded me of the other Carlin bit that I can't get into details when he's in confession. Father, I've been impure to the impurest of the impure. I've been impure in thought, word, and deed. And so when you said impure, I'm like, oh my, and then you said Carlin. I went,
yeah.
There it is. We've tied it all together.
You know, the beauty of Carlin, if you go back and you watch, and it's, you can do it on YouTube and you can watch the, you know, the seven dirty words, seven words you can't say. And by the way, all of those words now you can say, but what you can't say is that transgender is actually a man. You have to say that it's that transgender is a woman. Those are the things that you can't say.
So
you can actually, because sometimes I'll be watching, you know, something that played on cable, and then, you know, a word blurts out, and I'm like, whoa, did they allow that? And it turns out, yeah, no, when that was on cable, they allowed that word. But if you watch Carlin deliver that, he's not reading cue cards. He's not reading anything, and he doesn't stutter, stammer, or anything. He is on it, and it's so, you want to talk about precision. He was anything but imprecise. He just had that brilliant delivery, and that was part of it, because he could get straight to a point. He could cut right through it, and I love that about his delivery. Look, there were a lot of things that he brought up, especially in his later years, that I disagree with in his observations, but he was still brilliant at how he presented them.
Just want to make sure that I get back to my original point, because I took us off track there. Mm. And the original point is everything across the board, everything is a lie, and everybody knows it's a lie. So everything that Biden says, mm-hmm. everybody questions all the time. But the fact is, publicly, he isn't in a blunt way, and neither are the people that surround him. Nobody ever says, "You're lying."
Right.
You don't
right.
hear that.
No, you don't.
You don't hear, "You're lying."
Mm-mm. No.
And it's, the disinformation board should have been the lying board.
Yeah.
When the Department of Justice, or not Department of Homeland Security, came up with that one.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just to, and the funny thing is, because that would have been easy. So your lying board, the person that you wish to lead the lying board is one of the biggest liars.
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling me? That's a lot easier than throwing disinformation and misinformation.
If you're going to trim the fat on that one, right. That's how it was trying to play out. Yes.
But everything, even about his health. I mean, like I said, his health, everybody knows. Everybody believes something's wrong with him, and everybody pretends there's nothing wrong with him, and right. Nobody can directly confront it without being chastised.
Right.
And that's why it's okay mm-hmm. to talk about his cognitive problems mm-hmm. because the White House and his family says he has none.
He has none.
That he is as capable as anybody else. So at that point, you can make fun of it. If it was, and they admitted it's a cognitive problem, he has early onset dementia, then mm-hmm. you would be mocking a disability.
Right. Exactly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Listen to Red Eye Radio wherever you are with the Red Eye Radio app. Available.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. And that is, again, and I know we've talked about it before, but I think it's really important because I think it's, to me, this is something I haven't covered to this degree. Hmm. You did a little bit during the first year of Obama. Remember when nobody was, everybody was afraid to criticize him. Mm-hmm. And,
late night comedians.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're still doing Bush jokes because there's nothing funny about him.
Exactly. And of course there is.
Yeah.
You ever see I was watching the other day Jay Farrow do his impression of Obama. He had me on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, because it's what it's the voice is down, but right. you know, it was he was when he was doing Obama, he was doing basically being asked the question, what was the most favorite part of being in the White House? And it was about going in the Lincoln bedroom with Michelle. And you can guess what,
right.
you know, you go into the bedroom, of course.
Yeah.
And the way that he just did it was, I mean, you were just losing it. I mean, it was awesome. And it's like, of course, there's something funny with every politician. But even then, I mean, the big lie for him came with, and I think the big lie started, with Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, the liberal media called him out on it. Because mm-hmm. remember, that was a lie of the year.
Right.
What was that, 2009, 2010?
Wow.
But now you're at a point where, like I said, everybody knows that the president's having cognitive problems. His family, the White House, absolutely not. He is as good as any 20-year-old, 30-year-old. Yeah. Everything is fine.
Right.
And you look at the polls, 75% of America says, no, there's something wrong.
Right.
We're concerned with it, whether it's just age or cognitive problems. There is a problem there.
Right.
And everybody just pretends. And if you bring it up, you're criticized and demonized. Yet everybody knows.
Yep.
And believes there's something wrong.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances if you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled taxes?
The Vona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just one more article out there and one more happening in the liberal transgender activist movement. You had Riley Gaines, the female swimmer, refuses to be silent. This was in the New York Post. This is not progressive, she told the Post, about biologically male transgender athletes competing in women's sports. We are not moving forward. This is actually quite the opposite. We're going back 50 years in time to before Title IX. That sounds familiar, like I've heard that before sometime. Like there's some guys on the radio been talking about this for, over a decade. And warned that this was going to happen and warned about how this was going to destroy Title IX and how it would destroy of feminism. Who are those guys that we're talking about? They're not geniuses at all. I mean,
No. One of them is really stupid. I don't know. I can't remember which one, but yeah.
The former University of Kentucky swimmer stepped into the spotlight in March of last year. Think about this. This is really only where, because it was the Leah Thomas that set this off. It really was.
Yeah.
You know, you had a few women that came in, for example, Martina Navratilova, and she was eviscerated for it and just sort of disappeared.
Yeah, right.
You know, this is sort of like a lot of Democrat narratives. It was the same as Black Lives Matter. Remember, you couldn't fight that.
Right.
Well, conservative talk radio did and called it out for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
of course, yeah.
And told you what Black Lives Matter was about and the lies of Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we found out later on, the greed of Black Lives Matter, where corporations lined up like crazy. And we made the comparison yesterday between Black Lives Matter and the whole ESG movement in this country.
Right.
Where now on that, companies are going, what the hell are we doing?
Right.
What's going on? Eventually the truth and reality hits on everything.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we see over the next few years that the Democrats are facing is this isn't abstract anymore. This isn't, look, if we do this and then the future, all the policies, all the liberal policies that we told you would fail are now being confronted by reality and they're failing.
Well, no, we can even apply that to the whole ESG thing because you could say in the abstract, in fact, there were discussions along the way, the companies and investors have to have a social conscience and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, no, you're right. We should blah, 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 blah. And we should be more mindful of blah, 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 blah. And in the future, we're going to blah, blah, blah. In the future, blah, 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 because not today, blah, 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 because that affects profits. And blah, 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 blah. Oh, wait, you want to do it now? No.
Yeah, exactly. And we said the same thing here. Eventually, the liberal transgender activist movement would hit reality. And finally, women would say, we've had enough.
Yeah.
It is amazing, though, the cowardice of liberal women, especially on this.
Yeah.
really is. The women, the liberal women leaders have been because when you think about it, what they caved to was the man dictating what the definition of a woman is.
Yeah.
That's the really incredible thing. That's the thing that's mind-boggling, where you sit there and go, oh, that didn't really happen. Were we all doing acid? Because that couldn't happen. The feminist movement could not absolutely crumble under the weight of a man saying, I'm going to dictate what a woman is. And Gloria Steinem, oh, yes, I'm all for it. Yay! Men get to decide what women are.
Eventually,
it was going to hit real women in real circumstances. And we had warned this for the longest time. For over a decade, we've been warning this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And precisely, we said, it will destroy the feminist movement.
Well, that's it.
And it has.
If you got in the Wayback Machine, if you had a time machine and went back and told Gloria Steinem back in the day, look, at some point, men are going to take over your movement. And you're going to like it.
Exactly.
I got to go back to the future now. So I'll see you later, Gloria.
Yeah. Oh, that's even better. I like that. I like that one. That's the way to say it. Men will take over. Men will dictate the definition of a woman, and the women will like it.
Well, imagine you get out of the time machine. You've got your cigar in hand, your whiskey, you know, you got your facial hair going, you know, a nice goatee. And you walk up and say, hey, Gloria, that's Ms. Steinem to you. Yeah, whatever. Come here. Listen, in the future, we're going to take over your little women's movement here, and you're going to like it. Then you get back in your Wayback Machine and go away.
You're going to appreciate that the critical thinking, common sense man was able to convince you that you're totally emotional and bizarre feelings that women should have opportunity. We, the men, will let you know that's wrong, and you will go willingly with us and agree with us, and you will like it because the man says so.
Yeah.
Because that's actually, you know, we do that. I mean, I do that because I know it will tick off people on the left. I mean, so there is some entertainment reasons for me doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really true.
No, it is.
It's actually true. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's true. And so and really it was, I really think when you finally got to hitting the bastion of progressive women in the Ivy League.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, progressive women, women that, you know, I'm liberal and I'm about women advancing, all of a sudden, they're being intimidated by the Democratic Party.
Because
people say, well, it's the far left doing it. That's the mainstream of the Democratic Party.
Right.
How do we know that? Look at the equity bill. I think in the House, almost every single Democrat voted for it. There might have been one, but it's mainstream within the Democratic Party. President supports it. Leadership supports it. 99.9% of the members of Congress, of Democrats, support it.
Yeah.
So it's not a fringe thing.
Right.
Even though they like to make it fringe, it's not fringe. It's the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And all of a sudden, these liberal Democratic women, you know, young women that are on these swim teams, they're losing their opportunity. And they're like, well, my God, this is the utmost in women hatred, in misogyny, in femophobia, of sexism.
Mm-hmm.
And now, not only that, but they're threatening our livelihoods, our lives, our scholarships. They're threatening everything. And it wasn't really until a significant portion of liberal women were denied opportunity where this became much more of an issue.
Right.
And I also think that along with and I have to say it because Dave Chappelle did take this into popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill Burr, the same thing. But Chappelle's the one that drove it because he got most of the publicity on it.
Yeah.
And that's what's driving it now. But Riley Gaines refuses to be silent. The former University of Kentucky swimmer stepped into the spotlight. She spoke out against biological male athletes competing in women's sports. Quote, we have to let people know as a group that a majority of us female athletes or females in general are not okay with this. Well, what you have to do is you've got to get liberal women, because conservative women are against it.
Right.
Conservative women have been against it the entire time. Nobody in the mainstream media cares what conservative women are saying.
No.
That's not going to be a news item. You know, you take the Ivy League, which is mostly liberal.
Yeah.
And you take the Ivy League and you take liberal women who are coming out and stating, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to let this thing go. Mm-hmm. You people are the sexist. You're the misogynist. You are the ones that are practicing femophobia. Don't you dare call me transphobic. You can be whatever you want. But what you're dictating is that a biological male can be a biological female because the man says so. That is the utmost in misogyny and sexism. And well, they need to be strong about it, and they need to pound on it each and every day.
Well, we brought it up earlier this week when Hillary said that women, and she was saying conservative women, Republican women, only vote the way that they're told by their boyfriend or their husband or their, she said, son, and or their, she clearly doesn't have a son, or their boss, that men tell them how to vote. Sorry, Hillary, it's your side that men are walking in and having their way with just about anything they want.
Yep.
They can take the sports away from you, any competition, even International Women's Day. Where's Hillary?
Yep. She said, well, she's probably, you know, supporting eating a Hershey's chocolate bar and supporting the rapper that's in Canada right now of a biological man being the symbol for Hershey's in Canada of a woman to celebrate on International Women's Day. That's how insane it is.
It is.
She was on the Unmuted podcast and said, if we as female athletes aren't willing to stick up for ourselves, we should not expect someone else to stand up for us. But that's because, and we know it, they were intimidated. The intimidation is great. We will destroy your life. We don't care whether you're a liberal. You're not a liberal unless you agree that men get to dictate to women what the definition of their biological sex is.
Right.
The daughter of two athletes, a Nashville native, started swimming at age 4. She was recruited by the University of Kentucky, where in addition to studying human health services and health law, she spent 6 hours a day in the water practicing. You really have to dedicate your entire 4 years of college to excelling. It's a major time commitment. She said the experience of competing against Leah Thomas in the NCAA championship last March felt like I was going into a race with my hands tied behind my back. I just want to ask this. Why is the Democratic Party, the mainstream of the Democratic Party, and if you're a Democrat, why are you anti-women? Why do you support the misogyny of the Democratic Party?
Repeatedly.
Over and over again.
It's actually one of your major causes right now.
Yep. Yeah.
Women are no longer to be celebrated. Stand down. Sit over there.
Yep. Do what the man says.
Mm-hmm. And watch the men break all of the records that are supposed to go to women.
Right.
In sports.
Right. And eventually start taking away your scholarships.
Yep. Think about that.
And then where it would go, your jobs.
Think about the, you set a record. As a female athlete, you set a record, a world record for something. And a man comes in and shatters that record and is celebrated by the media. All of your efforts are gone. Wow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Republicans to hold their first hearing on the origins of coronavirus next week. We will get to that here following the top of the hour. And also, a lot of articles this week about crime in Portland, Oregon, and then the story about the Walmarts, two of the Walmarts.
Two Walmarts gone from Portland.
Inside of Portland. I was watching. I looked up on YouTube yesterday and found a local news report on it, and everybody is saying, you know, Walmart won't say why, simply saying, well, because of the profit motive.
They said underperforming, and I thought, underperforming. Well, and it's likely because of the crime.
And everybody, the media, everything, shoplifting, people they talk to, shoplifting.
The CEO warned about that, said if we can't get on top of the shoplifting, there are some stores we're going to have to close.
There was a woman who shopped at the Walmart in Portland. She was crying. She said, this is the poor area. People need the Walmart
there.
They
need discount retailers.
Exactly. And she was crying. I mean, it was, in a certain way, it was heartbreaking watching it.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the specifics of that coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Hurley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we are Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He is Eric Hurley. Download our Red Eye Radio app and listen when and where you want. If you can't listen to one of our great radio stations overnight live. So, I'm looking here, just a couple of headlines. After Lightfoot loss, Chicago mayoral finalists split on crime strategy. This story here, crime turned Portland, Oregon into a hollowed out shell. Its neighbors are trying to keep it from happening to them. And they're talking about the three counties that, basically are in the, you know, the Portland area, which would be, Multnomah, Washington County and Clackamas County.
Yeah.
There. And they talked to the DA and officials in both the Clackamas and Washington County saying, nope, what's happening in Portland is just, you know, it's happening there, and we're not going to let it happen here. And they talk to citizens who say, you know, if you bring up we need more police, you might as well just say, you know, you're a traitor. You know, it's just you can't say it. You'll get the middle finger. You'll get attacked. You can't do it. And Portland is becoming a hollowed out shell, is the actual quote. And then the story that has been going around for the last couple of days is that Walmart, and the CEO of Walmart warned that the shoplifting doesn't stop. Well, how long ago was that? A year ago at least?
It wasn't that long ago. No, okay. It goes back a few months.
Okay, said if the shoplifting doesn't stop, stores will be closing. Two of the stores inside of Portland closing. As I said earlier, I was watching a local television news update on that from Portland. And the only thing they're talking about is it's shoplifting. Mm-hmm. Walmart won't confirm it. Well, why should they get involved in that?
All they have to say is underperforming store, which means that you're taking too big of a loss. You can't control this kind of loss.
Not going to get into the specifics of it, because if we do, then we get involved in the politics of it, and we're not going to do that.
Right.
So you simply say underperforming stores.
Yep.
You know, I'm old enough to remember in numerous cities that I worked in, especially, going back 20 years ago and 30 years ago, the concern that you did not have grocery stores and you did not have major retail outlets with cheap goods in the cities.
Right.
And you had the politicians in the cities screaming racism. Part of the problem back then was even crime.
Yeah.
Well, then we got tough on crime. And what happened? Or we got tougher on crime, I'll say that.
Mm.
And then these retail outlets said, okay. Grocery stores went, okay, we're in.
Yeah.
And now these same, I won't say the same politicians, but now the politicians in these liberal cities have made their cities a living hell.
Yeah.
Of violent crime, unlimited shoplifting, no consequences. And so now the reverse is happening and they're screaming again. As if businesses, they need to add ESGC for crime.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in D.C., they're wanting to lower the punishment for violent crime.
Yep.
Up till now, it's been, well, come on, it's just drug possession. Or come on, they're just taking, remember AOC, they're just stealing bread and milk because they're hungry.
Yep. And that's a load of horse manure, right, as we all know.
Right. The prosecutor in Dallas County. Well, as long as we, you know, you're not doing it for a profit. Well, of course you're doing it for a personal profit. Anytime you steal something, you're doing it so you don't have to pay for it. And he had to rescind that. All of these things that you know, liberals have been promoting and they expect, oh, no, it's going to be utopia. We won't even send, we shouldn't even send cops out on calls. We'll send a therapist because that's going to be perfectly safe for the therapist and the person they're investigating. I mean, we can just soft walk our way into, oh my gosh, why is the crime skyrocketing?
You know, you look in Chicago and you look at Paul Vallis, who's running, who's talking about, he's pledging to return the Chicago Police Department to its core mission to serve and protect the people of Chicago. Public safety is a human right. By the way, that's something Republicans should have adopted back in 2020.
Right, yeah.
I saw that and went, oh, there's a quote. Public safety is a human right.
Yeah.
Well, for Democrats, it's public safety for criminals is a human right.
Yeah,
right. But public safety is a human right. It's government's responsibility to ensure residents feel safe and secure. Confronting the city's crime problem and ensuring all of our residents' safety is my top priority. We deserve a city that is safe for all. The campaign page says city leadership has surrendered us to all to a criminal element that acts with seemingly impunity in treating unsuspecting innocent people as prey. The data confirms their confidence that few of them will ever be held accountable. And then you have the other candidate, Brandon Johnson, who is, you know, giving the normal, liberal hogwash. We have placed so much pressure and responsibility on law enforcement to behave as social workers, counselors, and marriage therapists. Yeah. That's what not law enforcement should be, blah, 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 blah.
We put too much pressure on them. When a couple of years ago it was, they shouldn't exist.
Yeah, I don't buy either. You have to, as a Democrat, you have to show me, because you saw Eric Adams and people were saying, okay, that's the guy. And you and I said, well, you know, as you had, you know, Republicans commenting and, you know, conservative media commenting, oh, this is a great thing. We said, well, don't hold your breath, you know, yet. Look, they have to deal within the system, even if they do wish to do it. And Adams is now viewed as a complete failure very early on.
Right.
And he's a police officer.
Yep.
Was a police officer. I think people understand my point. And so when you look at it, when you see Portland, when you see what's going on in Los Angeles, when you look at what's going on in Chicago. And it's obvious when you know, this is the thing that blows my mind. You can sell people the most bizarre, unrealistic narratives, abstract narratives, and they'll buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
From, defund the police, that will work. And what do we say from the very beginning? No, it won't. We can power our entire society on solar and wind. No, you can't.
No.
And, I go back to what we talked about yesterday and the Supreme Court and the fact that the Supreme Court, again, in session and oral arguments the other day. And you go back to look at people saying, well, I don't agree with where the Supreme Court's going. And then you see the polls that show the majority of people don't even know what the Supreme Court's responsibility is. They have no idea what the separation of powers is. They can't name you. The majority of people cannot name you the three branches of government. Are people really that ignorant? Now, we know that even back in 2020, when you asked people, are you happy with your police department? Yes. Would you want to defund your police? No. But it's this abstract, well, we don't want it, but that other place could use it.
Yeah, right. No, they're acting really badly over there. What about your neighborhood? Everything's fine.
No, everything's fine here. And you just, was Barnum right? you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people. Oh, no, was that Barnum? No, I'm sorry. Barnum was a sucker is born every day.
Yeah.
Every minute.
Every
yes,
minute.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
the Democratic Party slogan is you can fool some of the people some of the time, and you can fool most of the people most of the time. They rewrote that.
And then
one.
Eventually we're going to be able to fool all the people all the time.
Because think about it. That's the thing. All these concepts that are self-evident, instinct tells you they won't work. Your survival instinct tells you it won't work.
Right.
And yet they do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to sell it.
Yep.
They're able to sell it to a significant portion of people who are the ones that are hurt by it.
Yep.
You know, we've often talked about on taxes how the biggest lie the Democrats continually sell to their constituents who are poor is that we can punish the companies by taxing them, when basically it's a stealth tax that hurts the poor the most. And they continually sell it. They've sold that for 50 years.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's the biggest economic lie that they have told, but the poor who vote Democrat mm-hmm. have voted for it over mm-hmm. and
yeah.
over
right.
and over again. And the thing is, the big, screw really twisting is the fact that they know the corporations pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
They know it. They see what oil companies do. They know it. They pretend the company, well, they shouldn't do it, and we hope that they won't. But they do every time, which means you're actually proposing something that hurts the poor the most. And the worst thing about it is it's a stealth tax. They actually don't see themselves being taxed.
No. No, they don't.
Because it doesn't come in an invoice.
Well, and that's it. You know, it's the greatest way to maintain that control, the hidden tax. And don't you dare put it out there that, don't put it on the shelf. Remember in Philadelphia, they did the sugar tax, and then the soda went through the roof, and it was outrageous. And so the store owners put signs up saying, because of the new tax,
oh,
this is going to be your price. And then city leaders came in and said, no, you can't do that. That's unfair. How dare you tell the truth about what we just did?
I remember that there were then in the beat, like in the suburban stores, right, you know, right on the city line.
Yeah.
We're putting soft drinks are cheaper over here.
Right.
And the city leaders were getting upset about that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, stop telling people what's going on.
Right. How dare you?
But yeah, that's the thing that I think is the great mystery, the things that were self-evident. But think about how Black Lives Matter was able to sell their lie and how corporations, we're talking corporations. We're talking these CEOs. Mm-hmm. They all fell for the lie of Black Lives Matter.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The sports leagues did. And it was blatant that they were piling a bunch of lies at the American public. And they still went along with it anyway.
Yep.
And then defund the police came along with it. We all knew it would be a disaster. The people of the cities went along with it, even though they themselves didn't want the defunding of the police where they lived.
Right.
And they still went along with it. And Johnson, have the polls come out? Is Johnson in the lead in Chicago?
I haven't seen any polls yet.
Will you actually get in an election where the people voted out a incumbent mayor because she's not tough on crime? Will they reelect another person who admits they won't be tough on crime?
Right.
Will they all be
We'll just say it differently.
Will they all be out with their cheer for Brandon Johnson? Let's go, Brandon.
Yeah.
Let's go, Brandon.
Right. Why not?
Just amazing. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on compliance, safety, accountability. To determine a driver's compliance, safety, accountability, or CSA score, safety event data is recorded and compared against that of other drivers. Drivers are given a CSA score, but unlike motor carrier scores, driver scores are only visible to enforcement officers during an audit. However, drivers' most recent 5 years of crash data and 3 years of roadside inspection data is made available to potential employers via the pre-employment screening program. So it's a good idea for drivers to review their online PSP record from time to time. A request for data review can be submitted via data queues to have errors corrected or to have a non-preventable crash designation indicated for a crash. In the event a current or previous carrier is audited, records on drivers with high CSA scores will be targeted first, but individual drivers are not subject to CSA interventions like motor carriers. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, we talked earlier about Hershey's chocolate in Canada, how they celebrated International Women's Day yesterday by putting a transgender woman, a biological male, on a candy wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
So you celebrate International Women's Day with a man.
Yeah.
Well, the Toronto Raptors decided to celebrate Women's History Month by posting a video with players talking about why women are great.
Mm.
And they ended up having to apologize. Why are women great?
Why?
Three of the players who they chose to go out there and give the presentation, well, two out of the three players basically said women are great because they have babies.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Yes.
No.
The trio was tasked with each giving a reason why girls run the world.
Oh. Oh.
The Run the World theme is a play on a song that says girls run the world. A trend emerged quickly as the first player said girls run the world because they birth everybody.
Oh, boy.
Then the other one said they are the only ones who can procreate.
Oh, boy.
Now, in a sensible world, you say, well, yeah, the fact that they women are the sex that can procreate makes them extremely special, correct? Can't say that in the liberal world.
No, no,
and,
no, no.
And then, but here we go. To end it, this is why you need, you should have a script for this. Mm-hmm. The last player said, women are great. They run the world because they are queens. The Toronto Raptors had to apologize for the video.
Yeah. Man. Just, I mean, you should have known. Come on, guys.
Don't tell the truth. Why
you're
do
gonna, you're going to salute women and you're going to bring science into it?
Now
you're going to bring having babies into it?
Now, if you ask me the question, why do women run the world? It's, well, because they run us.
Pretty much.
Yeah, because they tell us what to do.
Right.
So good, you know you want to listen again with our podcast, available on our app and at redeyeradioshow.com.
And he's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, since economic numbers will be coming out today, let's talk about some of the economic stuff that we didn't talk about this week.
Okay.
First off, with and we had talked about this last month, and I believe the month before, that you don't see as much focus on unemployment numbers as a barometer of how the economy is doing. And that's been some of the talk that has been going on. The fact that the unemployment numbers that, and again, we didn't start this narrative, and it's not a political narrative to say that the economy is, you know, that the unemployment numbers, we didn't start this narrative. Economists did.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not a political narrative that we started so we can say, well, the Biden economy is doing terrible. It's just the reality of the massive shift that we have seen in people working since COVID.
Yeah. Right.
And the fact that it's the question of, is it hitting now, the fact that we are going to have massive labor shortages. And when you have massive labor shortages, well, then the unemployment number is always going to look artificially low.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's still, you know, plenty of jobs out there. A lot of those companies can't match. That's part of the problem. There's been a ton of layoffs recently, but because we don't have the number of people coming into the workforce, we don't have, as we did post-World War II, tens of millions of women coming into the workforce full-time over that period.
Mm-hmm.
We did not have the baby boom. The baby boom is gone. That's done. And so we don't have a growing population, which skews the unemployment numbers and the employment numbers out there. And so to judge an economy on that, we never really used the unemployment numbers. You did in a way, but you could sort of see how the economy is doing by, you know, durable goods and services.
Right.
You know, what was actually going there. Not even the GDP. The GDP can give you an indicator as to the direction of, because if money is being transferred and moved around, that can mean, especially in the private sector, that can mean that does relate in some way to the expansion of the economy. The problem with the GDP is government spending that does not create necessarily goods and services that makes the economy more efficient and more productive doesn't count the same when it comes to economic growth, as, for example, the production of durable goods and the increase in services. Because services would be legit. Services you can make. You may not be producing something. You may be providing a service. But that service, depending on what that service is, can make the economy more productive and efficient, which does add to economic growth.
Yeah, right.
Even if it's not directly, it's indirectly. But when you look at the you know, the unemployment numbers, you're saying, I don't know. And I guess there'll be more research on it. But when we had brought it up last time, you guys are trying to find any excuse to show that the and I say Obama, I said Obama economy before, that the Biden economy, you know, isn't working. Oh, no, we didn't come up with it. We're reading other economists, and there's a legit point to it.
Yeah.
There's actually a legit point. You know, how are the numbers skewed because of the lack of available people in the workforce that wasn't there even 3 years ago?
Right.
So the other economic news, you and I talked about this yesterday off the air. Tesla stock falls 5%. And this comes from MarketWatch. I'll just read the headline. Tesla stock falls 5% as Elon Musk's Master Plan 3 is short on details about both cars and finances. It was interesting because it was a lot of hype that he put forth. The stockholders didn't buy into it.
Right.
You know, about what they're going to do, what we're going to be able to make electric vehicles cheaper. How?
Well, you know, he said there were a couple of things. One of the things he mentioned was smaller manufacturing plants. I thought, well, wait a minute. That sounds counterintuitive, but there wasn't more to it. So I don't know what kind of efficiencies he's going to create. If he's looking at the delivery charges of those cars, because they are delivered not on the electric Tesla truck, they are delivered on diesel-powered big rigs, at least for now. And maybe he's saying that it lessens the delivery charge if you put more manufacturing plants in, or, you know, smaller plants in more places. I haven't been able to slice that math and make it work since he put that out. How does a smaller manufacturing plant get you and other items get you to slashing the cost in half?
You know, I could think as well, you'd produce fewer cars, therefore you'd have a fewer fewer monetary losses.
Well, I mean, is he going to start 3D printing the cars?
well, when you know, when he said, you know, the cars are going to be cheaper in the future, I'm like, how? How are you going to get there? I don't see it, especially with you look over the next, and it's, again, it's not us doing the figuring.
Right.
It's okay with what you need to get the batteries, you know, just the batteries alone, with the supply limitation of everything you need to make the batteries. Battery prices are only going to continue to go up because the more demand and less supply and not the ability to be able to get it to market. There is no way that makes a electric vehicle cheaper. And so how else do you do it? Well, the next day you see, you know, the next day Elon Musk unveils plans for a $10 billion Tesla gigafactory to produce electric vehicles in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you have to do? You have to make it outside the United States. And it's interesting because then there's the other story, trying to juxtaposition all these different stories about the trade war that Biden created and the Democrats created because of the subsidies for American-built electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And who pointed, the Republican senator pointed this out in the last 2 days. They said, notice the fact that as soon as the credits for EVs came out, the cost of electric vehicles went up.
Yeah.
You know, that's the bubble that you create, just like college, the college bubble. When there's cheap money, when money is available for free, the cost of the product goes up.
Mm-hmm.
you know, simple economics. But yeah, but when you say, okay, that's how you do it long term for EVs, you build them out of the United States. So you can offer the subsidies as the United States is doing, but that's only temporary. And if you're looking long term, and if you're going to build a $10 billion gigafactory in Mexico, you're looking long term. You've got to have cheap labor. You've got to have cheaper labor. The labor in the United States is going to be some of the most expensive labor in the world. You can't get around that.
Right.
And one of the reasons labor is going to be much more expensive in the United States is the fact that our population isn't increasing.
Well, okay. So that would be the next question for Elon Musk. Here's a guy who is, and certainly has been at the top of the discussions about AI. And he's talking about, you know, in part in terms of these plants that they could they want to have a generalized standardized plant that would build more than one model of Tesla. And for any OEM, that would be unique. But here's my question. The next question is, how much automation do you foresee? Because they're talking, everybody right now in the EV market seems to be focusing on 2030. And because it was Amazon that announced that they expect to have 100,000 Rivian Amazon vans, electric vehicle vans, delivery vans, in use by 2030. So everyone is in the EV market seems to be focused on 2030. But
by the way, as their stock went down 2 days ago, 17%. Mm-hmm.
And you look at these things, yeah, and I don't know which came first, that statement or the stock drop, but it could be, you know, could be either or. But it also could be the reaction to the stock drop. And this is something you've seen with Tesla. The stock has not done well lately, and that's why you have, and they're at their big, they were at their big Tesla meeting, but you had a lot of them calling for, investors calling for Elon Musk to spend less time at Twitter and more time at Tesla. And they're moving the Tesla, engineering headquarters back to California to be close to Twitter. So I guess he can clone himself and then have one Elon at each location and nobody will know.
Well, because the feds didn't approve of the chip in humans yet.
Right.
So unless he plans to put a chip in another human being, which is his chip.
I'm not so sure he waits for approval on things. I think he's already there. I think he's already cloned himself.
He could put the chip inside himself, cloning himself.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right, exactly. But it's a libertarian. I'd support that. Look, if it's just you, then fine. But the AI part of it, the automation for building, I would love to know what he sees in terms of building the Tesla vehicles and automation going forward. How much of that build on any one model might be done by automation, by robots? That's what I would love to know. And because there isn't a workforce, you just hit it. We're not growing as a workforce, and we're not going to change immigration by 2030. I don't think that's going to happen. You're not going to increase the number of visas. The American people don't want that. So what do you do? Well, here's a guy who knows all about automation and AI and robots and everything else, and they've been working. I have to believe that a lot of that technology is going to be integrated even further into the building of their cars. I would just love to know what he sees and if there is a goal that he's looking to achieve in terms of how much on the line, how much is going to be done by automation. I'd love to know that. It's intriguing to me. I don't have really any opinion on it. I mean, going forward, that's just the way it's going to be done because you don't have enough people.
Well, if AI works and is more productive and efficient than a human assembly line worker, then it's going to be AI. You can't stop it.
Yep. And they're setting up in in Texas in manufacturing. The engineering headquarters going back to California, but manufacturing still setting up in Texas. And Texas is not a union state. I mean, they could, you know, he may run it, and he's been running into union issues in other states. But the fact of the matter is that you're going to get automation one way or the other, even in union states. It's just, you're just not going to have enough people to do the gig.
If AI is whatever percent more efficient than a non-union worker, which it will get to that point in certain jobs, then it will be even more efficient with union than union workers. They will move. Those jobs will go.
Yeah, right.
They may go to another state. They may go to another country. The plants may close down, but unions can't stop AI.
Right.
They might be able to slow it down at a particular plant, but they'll just build another plant where they do it somewhere else.
Right. Yep.
You can't stop it.
Nope.
So, nope. Yeah. So I saw that yesterday, and I'm like, wow. As a pretty poor presentation, because obviously the stockholders didn't buy it. It's like, if you're going to make all these promises, you got to give us more specifics.
Yeah, you do.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So there it is, Republicans to hold first hearing on the origins of coronavirus next week, starting next Wednesday. And the goal will be to gather facts about the origins of the virus. No details yet whether Democrats will attend.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Null. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you were only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy, game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.